Streaming 24/7. This is Radio Influence.
When you are looking for the best Bucs coverage, why not go to someone who's actually been on the field?
B-U-C-C-A-N-E-E-R-S. Go Bucs!
This is the only podcast for the Buccaneers by a Buccaneer. You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody. This is Ian Beckles. Welcome to In the Trenches. This is my podcast where we talk a lot of football, actually all football. My favorite year podcast is a lot of pop culture and Donald Trump talk and a little bit more Donald Trump talk and maybe a little bit of sports, but a lot of Donald Trump talk, which is always fun lately. So this is In the Trenches. This is my football podcast. This will be going on all the way through the season. And it may be off-season, you never know, because there's always something going on. Free agency, combine, a lot of different things. I don't know a lot about many things, but I do know a lot about football. Now, college season is here, which is a positive thing. I found myself on Saturday watching Florida A&M against like some was Southern something. And the uniforms were awful. The play was awful, but I watched it. It's football. And football is a good thing. There's only one negative thing to me about college football. It's Lee Corso. I can't do it anymore. I can't do it. 4 years ago, Lee Corso should have been off television. If they don't give him a script, they should not let him talk because it's painful. And everybody around him is in pain, as you can see. Like, once he starts bumbling, everybody's trying to get in there, and it's just a little bit awkward for me. So other than that, I watched a little bit of college football this year. My team is USF, I guess. I mean, I don't watch them every week. From what everybody says, they're supposed to be fantastic this year, and I hear people talk about being undefeated, and, they almost pee-peed on themselves last week. And then they have another team. It's a Stony Brook, I think it is. Like, I don't never heard of them, ever. Don't know where it is, never heard of them. Better not lose to them. So USF's my team. Other than that, Indiana's where I went. I'll watch it. Indiana's the same thing to me every year, but I don't let them do it. They start off hot, 3-0. Everybody says, hey, what about them Hoosiers? And they end up losing five games, or maybe not winning a Big Ten game. They're able to do that as well. Before I get to the NFL stuff, I want to send some love to the people over there in Houston. That Hurricane Harvey slammed them pretty damn good. I can't imagine your whole town being wiped out and all your belongings gone, and you're just waiting in 3 feet of water. And then I'm hearing stories of alligators and snakes and fire ants. I can't think of a worse situation myself than to be in the water with snakes and fire ants. Gators don't bother me. I swear, gator doesn't bother me like a snake or fire ants, okay? Actually, gators bother me too, if I'm in the water, that's for sure. But, you gotta send some love over those people, and this is the unfortunate part, You get so jaded to donating, what happened in Katrina with everybody donating their money, and there was all kind of stars putting their names on stuff, and they found out that none of the money got there, obviously. None of the money got there. I don't know who grabs that money, but for that reason, if you can't go there and help with your hands, all those big foundations to me, I can't do it. I have my own foundation. I give back that way. But those big foundations, there's too many people with big offices, if you know what I'm saying. Now, I know you guys were watching Hard Knocks, religiously. I think I watch it three times during the week. Like, if I'm sitting there, I got nothing to do, I'll put it back on. You always see something else that's funky in it. I was very, very, very impressed with Jameis Winston's training regimen. Like, I've seen a lot of great athletes, and he's certainly a great athlete. He's a better athlete than I thought, okay, after watching him train, because he was doing some advanced-type shit, okay? The weight room, okay, used to be where I live, all right? And there are going to be some people telling Ian Beckles' weight room stories, no doubt about it. But what he was doing, I ain't doing that, jumping up and down and doing these crazy chins, and His core is very, very strong. You know, what we did back in the day, we were old school, lifting big weights type things. I don't even know if they do that anymore because, you know, your core is probably more important. Now, as an offensive lineman, it always helps to bench 500 pounds. But I would bet Ali Marpet would be close. I don't know how much he bench presses, but I stood beside the dude. I wouldn't be shocked if he could bench press 500. Ali Marpet, they had him just down the street here at Picnic Island playing a ukulele, reading books. What the hell? What's going on? Your offensive lineman, what's happening, man? Reading books. What's wrong with you? Like poetry books and stuff. God bless him, but, you know, I just didn't do that too much. And I definitely didn't play ukulele. I would think that he would grab maybe a little bit. If everybody knows a ukulele, it's just a little itty-bitty guitar. And there's definitely more manly instruments than a ukulele. But I guess he's a deep-thinking type dude, and he's actually playing pretty darn well at center. I questioned that move. You don't want to move, you know, a Pro Bowl-type right guard and move him to center, then hopefully he struggles. But Ali's doing a really good job there. So far, so good with that. They had a couple banged-up people, and DeMar Dotson had a little groin. And I was with him a couple days ago. I think he's going to be fine. You know, Pamfield, they sat down. And listen, is it a big deal? I don't know anymore. Everybody keeps on talking about protecting and saving players. What about getting ready? What about getting ready? I mean, we just didn't do it. We played. We played all the time. We played fourth preseason game. We played. And, you know, when they got to go to Miami and you got to play 65, maybe 70 plays in that heat, like somebody like DeMar Dotson, he hasn't played more than 20 snaps in the preseason. Okay, Pamfield couldn't have played that many either. So, you know, as an offensive lineman, it's not like a wide receiver or even a defensive lineman, okay? If a defensive lineman gets tired, he pats his head and they put somebody in for him. Your coach tells you that. Your coach will tell you, play hard. If you get tired, that's okay. Tap your head, we'll take you out. There's nothing wrong with being tired. Everybody gets tired. Offensive linemen can't tap the helmet. We're the one position and quarterback. We can't tap our helmet. Actually, I don't think DBs can either. Maybe it's just defensive linemen. They're soft. But as an offensive lineman, you're not tapping your helmet to come out of the game. It's just not going to happen. I mean, that's not something that's an option. But, you know, when you're in that, you know, in Miami in that heat, and you're in that play 50, and you look down your legs and you don't know what's going on, that's a tough time. So I hope these guys are ready, okay? You know, it's a different time. I get it. But it sure looks like there's a lot more players. Somebody told me in social media that there's 111 players that are on IR already in the NFL. I mean, you know, Julian Edelman went down. He's done for the whole season. And, you know, that's not because of overwork or underwork. That just happens. But, you know, I don't know if these guys are overtraining, I don't know what it is. It's just back in the day as athletes, we didn't look like the athletes look today. But we certainly were more durable, 100%. When you're seeing the quarterbacks now, back in the day, quarterbacks never got knocked out of games. They never did. Barely. Now it seems like, oh, my God, he has a start, and the dude will play one game and get a concussion. When Brett Favre played, how many games straight and didn't tell you he had a concussion? He sure enough did, okay? So did Tom Brady. So did Peyton Manning. So did a lot of them. But this is the thing. They didn't come out the game. It's a different time to where everybody's a little bit more knowledgeable about concussions, and it's smart to come out of the game. But when you come in there and you start one game and you come out with a concussion, your career is probably over. They can't depend on you. You come out of one game with a concussion, you know, it's going to be hard to depend on you. That's for sure. Now, I'm not usually a flamboyant type of person to where on a football field. I like people that just do their thing. You know, I don't like a whole lot of dancing and all kind of stuff like that. And watching Hard Knocks, I had Quan Alexander getting his red hair. I like it. That's because it's Quan. It was other people I go, you look stupid. But Quan Alexander's bringing heat now, so I'm okay with him having that red hair and stick with it, Quan. I think it's a good look. And he made it bright, bright red. He wasn't messing around at all. Your boy Dirk Cutter was getting on the team for being lifeless, not being in the playbooks. See, that's the thing there, okay? sometimes you're not going to have energy, but missed assignments, coaches hate. Coaches don't mind you getting your butt kicked. That happens. But missed assignments, coaches hate. They hate it because, you know, young players, which the Bucks still have a lot of, you watch a young player come in the NFL, and I'm the same way, okay? When you come out of college, you know, when I was in college, we had 4 running plays and 5 passing plays, okay? That was it, pretty much. When you get to the NFL, boy, you got a lot of stuff. So you're learning for the first time something that's complicated, and sometimes you don't know how to react. So your coach is sitting up there teaching, and you're listening, but you don't really hear it. Older players, watch what an older player does. Older players are going to have a bunch of notebooks. A bunch of notebooks. One notebook just for what the coach says. Because you know what? Sometimes the coach says something, and you don't have time to come back and think about it. Or somebody will tell you something, and you realize that 2 seconds later, you forgot it. That happens. It still happens. If you write it down, you won't forget it. That's me anyways. So we took so many notes, it was crazy. When I was a rookie, I looked at Paul Gruber and Rob Taylor. I said, why are you guys taking so many notes? And they just laughed at me. And then later in my career, when I was in Philadelphia, all the young kids were like, why do you take so many notes? And I said, well, this is how I prepare myself. But it's when you hear Dirk Cutter saying, a lot of you guys have to get in your playbook, that's a lot of youth right there. You're not going to have to tell, you know, veteran players to get into their playbook, okay? And I like the fact he ran some gassers. We've done that after practice. This is probably the worst thing ever. When I was with the Jets and Bill Parcells was a coach, they had a scrimmage, and Randy Thomas was a starting guard, and I was backing up. That would have been my 10th year. I was backing him up, and Randy Thomas was good. He was a rookie. He was good. I knew he was going to start. So I was backing up, and I played so well that they cut the guy behind me. So we had a scrimmage, and it went ones, then twos, then threes. Then they went again, ones, twos, and threes. So me being new, Randy Thomas took the ones. I took the twos. That's 12 plays. Then I took the threes. That's another 12 plays after each other, okay? In Hempstead or wherever the hell we were in New York, but it's hot. Ones go back in for 12 plays. I did the twos, and I did the threes again. So I did 48 plays in a practice. That's a lot of plays, okay? Especially full-speed plays. I'm going to tell you, I'd never been that tired in my life. So I thought. Until Bill Parcells said, get on the line. And I looked at everybody, I go, is this a joke? No, we always have to run 3 gassers after the scrimmage. I mean, if ever in my life I conceded to whatever, I just couldn't. I couldn't. I was so tired. And I remember the first, we have to do it under a certain time. I don't remember the time. But the first one, somebody jumps and Bill Parcells says, everybody go back 5 yards. And that was it. I was done. I ran so damn slow. I was so gassed as Bill Parcells was walking behind me, called me a fat ass. And he's built like a garbage can, but he's going to call me a fat ass. And I took it because Bill Parcells is he's very, very scary. Now, Doug Martin, okay, 3-game suspension. You know, I'd heard rumors that Doug was in the club acting a fool, you know, Friday nights and stuff, and that's not really conducive to, you know, success. I'm glad that Doug realized he needed to get some help. They're depicting him in a good way on Hard Knocks, which is good. And I think the Buccaneers are really auditioning him because I don't think it's just his job. I really don't. Because you're going to miss 3 games, and you make a lot of money. And his statistics last year weren't of a running back that makes a lot of money. They were below average, actually. I don't know what Doug's making, but he just signed a contract last year, and don't think that doesn't come into play, that you're making a lot of money and not you didn't produce that much last year. So the Bucks would have to make, I think he's a fan favorite, so I think he's end up making a team, but I don't know if the Bucks are certain that's going to be their number one guy. Now, the Buccaneers head over there to Jacksonville. It was good to see the boys come out of the bus. Some clean young men who obviously don't have any problem spending money because when we stepped out the bus, we weren't draped in Versace and had gold-studded diamond bracelets and watches. No, I'm not mad at them. It's just later on in life that you're going to be sick that you paid that much money for that Versace shirt that don't look that damn good. It was good to see I like when I see two offensive linemen talking, because that's probably what I was doing my whole career. Either it was with Tony Mayberry or Rob Taylor or Tom McHale or whoever it may be. They had Howley and Marpet talking before practice. And what people don't realize is a practice for an offensive lineman is the worst thing in the world, okay? There's nothing that's going to happen that's going to be fulfilling for you as an offensive lineman other than just getting your head kicked in and being tired. Listen to what, you know, when you look over there and I see the wide receivers standing around, sometimes they're chewing gum and they're running routes and they're joking around in the jugs machine. That's fun. The jugs machine is fun. I would love to just catch footballs all day long. Offensive linemen, we hit the sled. Anybody ever hit the sled before? I mean, when you see people training in the gym, if you think you're in good shape, go push the sled. So that's what we did. We did contact drills. We're either punching each other in the chest or doing something really stupid, and none of it's fun, and smashing our heads into each other. So you see two offensive linemen before practice, and you just, it's a miserable time. And I miss the game of football, but I definitely don't miss that part of it. Practices suck. They really do. Now, looking at Hard Knocks, you can tell Jameis is trying to change the attitude of this football team, because he has it. He was born with it. He has it, okay? He has that winning attitude. Because let me tell you something. When you go, I guarantee, when you go to the Patriots and you see them and the way they conduct themselves, I guarantee their attitudes are different. The Bucs still have to change their attitude. And Jameis is trying to do it. And they're not winners yet. They're not winners yet. It doesn't matter what everybody says. It really doesn't. They got to go out there and win. And they're about as talented as I've seen, but the defense still has to go out there and do their thing as well. You know, pass rush has been so-so to this point. You know, the Bucs haven't really had a great pass rush since way, way back when Warren and Simeon. That's the last time the Bucs had even average. They don't get to the passer. You know what? Teams that don't get to the passer don't win. I'm telling you. Now, Jameis, you know, when he's sitting in the room with DeSean Jackson, I believe it was, and they're going over all the plays, Ryan Fitzpatrick, everybody says he got the highest Wunderlich grade, and good for you. He went to Harvard. He's probably very, very smart. There's a lot of people that are football smart, or have, when they talk about football IQ, that really means something. When I hear Jameis talk, it's very clear to me that he probably has a football IQ of a quarterback that's probably twice as old. And when he got into the league, he was already ready for what was coming. And not a lot of them are. He's still learning now, don't get me wrong. But when you talk about the IQ part of it, he's way up there. Now, listen, I was 6'1", 310, okay? I wasn't the biggest lineman in the world. Trust me, I started for 9 years. I'd like to believe that my football IQ is high. I didn't get great grades, but football itself is, and to me, the biggest factor is loving the game. Like, I played with people that didn't love the game. If you don't love the game, then your IQ can't be that high. It just can't. And Jameis clearly loves the game, and he clearly loves to compete. Ryan Fitzpatrick on the football field, no football IQ. Boy, I tell you, for a guy who's that smart and been around as long as he did, he made some bonehead decisions this the weekend. Because there's certain plays you don't run into certain looks. And before the play, I was like, you got to know that guy's coming. And he's naked rolling right into him. You got to know that's coming. As a quarterback, when you look out there and you see somebody's not accounted for, when you turn your hips and turn your head, you better be ready for somebody to be right in your face. And he had no idea. So, I mean, for what I've seen from him so far in preseason, I don't know if he's a man. I don't know if we have our backup quarterback on the roster, but I'm not sure Fitzpatrick is a guy. And I thought going in, he'd probably be one of the best backup quarterbacks because of, you know, his experience. But I don't think he's picking it up that well. I really don't. You know, when you talk about football IQ, when you saw Mike Smith, defensive coordinator for the Bucs, going off on a defensive back, okay? I went back and I rewound it. And his problem is sometimes you can cover the right person the wrong way, if that makes sense. you have to put yourself in the best position to win in any athletic endeavor, okay? So the coaches are going to tell you coaching points. The ones that last are the ones that remember coaching points, okay? So if he says we're playing cover two and they're in this look, you play them inside out because you have help some way. You have to know stuff like that. You have to put yourself in a good position. And Mike Smith went off on these young kids because they just weren't listening to the coaching points. You don't have to tell Rondé Barber where to be. You don't have to tell John Lynch where to be. You don't have to tell Warren Sapp where to be. You definitely don't. They pioneered that stuff. And you know what's funny? I've listened to Derrick Brooks talk before, and it's almost like he created that position. Tampa 2 will linebacker. Because you know what's funny? He did. Like, everybody talks about the Tampa 2 and what the Tampa 2 needs to be successful. And everybody says it needs a rush 3 technique. Okay? He needs a will linebacker and a strong safety. I'm not sure that's what they needed. I just think that's what they had. They had the best at all those positions. But they also had great rushers on both sides. The other linebackers were fantastic. The other corners, you know, made sense. You know what? Corners in a Tampa 2 are almost irrelevant. Really, they don't have to be great cover people. They just have to be very smart people. And Rondé Barber proved that. Rondé Barber was not a great cover corner. He always played with a better cover corner than him. In the system, he was perfect. Wasn't real fast, just real, real intelligent, and knows where the hell to be, and listens to the coaching points. And he almost pioneered that position as well. So as we go forward, you know, everybody's going to be compared to those guys, because at Tampa 2, you hear it in college. There's people playing Tampa 2 all the time in college, because for 10 years, that was one of the best defenses anybody's ever seen. Now, I'm starting to like Chris Baker, not so much as a football player, but just him as he's a clown. Okay, and I've been asking for a greasy guy for a long time, and he is darn greasy. It just seemed like the Buccaneers always had, you know, I want to say slender, because Warren Sapp certainly isn't slender, but he's not big. Warren was not big. He was under 300 pounds. That's not big. You know, I was playing against guys 350 way back when. But there was always about speed. Chris Baker can move a little bit, but he's more of a power guy, and you just need that. If everybody's jumping around people because, you know, you can say what you want about Gerald McCoy, but he's a jumping around person. You see it. He's either he beats you or he's far from the quarterback. But you always need to have somebody close to the quarterback in his face somehow. And I think Chris Baker hopefully could be that guy. I can tell he's the kind of guy that's not going to turn it on in preseason. He's not going to because he doesn't really need to. But when the regular season comes, spell him a little bit, give him a little – you know, give him a little time, but because he's going to get wore out. But somebody go in there and just push that pocket back on a consistent basis. Now, I had one complaint for Jameis. That rhyme was just really, really terrible before the game. It was awful, and I bet he cringed himself when he watched that on TV. And, you know, Fitzpatrick was like, you know, it was kind of long. And it was just, this was orchestrated. You know, it was too much. Now, you know, we're hearing people talking like the great John Gruden saying, you know, talking about Jameis being an MVP candidate. Listen, a lot has to happen for Jameis Winston to be MVP candidate. If Jameis Winston is an MVP candidate, then the Bucs are probably 11-5, okay, even if he's a candidate. Now, we have to understand this. Jameis has the ability to make every big throw possible and every big play possible, and he has the ability to create what's not there as well. But he still has to take 3 throws out of his game. There's going to be 3 throws a game that the great ones don't make, and Jameis still makes it. The one where he's sprawling, he don't make that throw. There's times where he's throwing into triple coverage and getting away with it sometimes, but sometimes the coin falls the other way. When you keep on taking chances like that, you get yourself in trouble. The first interception with Cameron Brait, I don't know if Cameron Brait didn't break off his route, but that was a terrible throw. But I don't know if there was an issue with Cameron Brait and his route. But it was if Cameron Brait ran the right route, that was a terrible throw. Okay? So regardless, I got to get on the same page on that one. So Jameis is still a middle-of-the-road quarterback with ridiculous amount of skill. That's where I put him right now. Now, everybody thinks that we're okay with our kicking situation. I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure yet because, you know, if you have one good game, you know, that doesn't end everything, okay? So I know there was a low kick in Jacksonville. He made all his kicks last week. But, you know, jury's still out. The thing that I do like is, you know, seeing the defense in Jacksonville, I'm seeing meanness, if anybody's seeing that. Like, we're getting mean, and I love a mean defense. Like, when I'm hearing Quan, get your ass off the field, and I'm hearing that, I'm liking that. That's youth, and that's, you know, that's swag. And I see the defense creating some swag. And whatever Jameis is trying to do on the offense, my guy, Quan Alexander, is trying to do that on defense. And he's been my guy since day one. First time I saw him play, I go, that's my guy right there. Now, the great Riley Bullock, I watch him all the time. He had a couple really big hustle plays in Jacksonville. I was looking to see if he was on most of the starting special teams things. He's on a few. He's a hustle guy, okay? But he's going to have to make his money on special teams, period. Just everything has to be on every single special teams. There's guys that made so much money on just playing special teams. Curtis Buckley's the best ever. If anybody remembers Curtis Buckley, he's the best special teams player that ever played the game. And you can debate it with Tasker, maybe a couple other names, Bill Bates back in the day. But to me, Curtis Buckley is the best special teams player to ever play. Let me give you a couple stories. Curtis, the first time I met him, he was in a mess hall at Pep and Root Stadium, UT. So I was probably in my fourth year, and he was in a rookie. And he sat across from me. He goes, "What's your name?" I said, "Ian Beckles. How are you?" I stuck my hand out, and he didn't shake my hand. I stuck my hand out. I didn't shake my hand. He goes, "What position you play?" I said, "Offensive line." He goes, "If you pull out on me, I'm going to knock you out." That's what he said. I was like, "Okay, it's good to meet you." And that was our first conversation. And then afterwards, I'm like, this dude's crazy. Like, he's crazy. One game, we play Washington, and Brian Mitchell was our kickoff returner. And Buckley comes up to me before the game. He goes, "Beck, watch me. I'm going to knock his ass out." I'm like, "Come on, Buck." He goes, "Watch me. I'm going to knock him out." And the guys start laughing. I walk to the end of the bench. I said, "Tony, watch this. Buck said he's going to knock Brian Mitchell out." And I'll be damned. He ran down the field. He was 7 yards ahead of every single person. He ain't the fastest dude. He was 7 yards ahead of every single person. The guy that was supposed to block him turned, and he was by him. He hit Brian Mitchell directly in his chin. He put him to sleep immediately and got the football. Walked to the side and said, "Told you." And I go, "I wouldn't have believed it. I wouldn't have believed it if I didn't see with my own eyes." So a guy like Curtis Buckley just made a name for himself in special teams, okay? When I was in Philadelphia and he was in Washington, Chad Lewis was our tight end, and Chad Lewis was on kickoff return. So I'm sitting beside Chad Lewis, and he sits beside me. He goes, "This is going to be a bad meeting." And I go, "Why?" He says, "Well, I had to block this guy, Curtis Buckley," and I start to laugh. And I go, "Was it bad?" He goes, "Oh, yeah, real, real bad." So the kickoff return starts, the film comes on, and special teams coach turns the light on. He goes, "Chad, you had a tough day." He had a big assignment. He goes, "But you can actually see you tucking your tail. So that's not a good start from the film." We hadn't started the film yet. So they put the film on, and he circles Curtis Buckley, who was on the Washington Redskins kickoff team. They kick the ball off. Curtis Buckley screams on the field. Chad Lewis turns around and literally flinched. Like, he just stood there and flinched. And Buckley ran through him and looked like he almost killed him on film. Ran through him, then made the tackle, probably 10 yards after he ran through him. And that's hard to do. So I look at Chad and I go, "Jesus, dude, how'd you recover from that?" He goes, "I didn't." So the next kickoff, I go, "No." He goes, "This one's worse." I go, "Come on, say it ain't so." So Buckley runs down, Chad Lewis turns around, and it looked like his feet didn't move and his head hit the turf. And Buckley went straight over the top of him and just almost decapitated him. That happened 3 times. And I go, "There's no," he goes, "Yep, that happened 3 times. 3 times Curtis Buckley ran over him. That should tell you how fast Curtis Buckley's running. First of all, Chad Lewis wasn't the toughest guy in the world. I'm not letting nobody do that. You have to put me to sleep. After the first one, which probably is not going to happen, you're going to have to put me to sleep because I'm coming at you the second one. I might miss, but you can't run over me three times. I can't let it happen. So Riley Bullock has to understand that has to be his mentality because he's crazy. I can see it. And when you're normally playing 60 plays in a normal game and now you're playing just 10, 15 special teams plays, you got to turn that up. So he has to know that that's the reason why he's going to make the team. And when you're second and third string linebacker, that's the only way you're going to make the team. But I like the kids, you know, I like his hustle, okay? A couple people I saw playing well, number 36, I'm trying to think of his name right now, but he was making some plays out there, defensive back. Winning in the preseason, I had this argument with a young lady at Elmer's the other day. I was having a cocktail. She goes, I'm really sad that the Buccaneers are losing these games at the end. I go, doesn't matter. She goes, no, it really does. I go, no, it doesn't. She goes, why would you say that? I go, because I've heard my head coaches say that. The head coaches just care if the ones play good, period. If the ones play well, they'll get them off the field, and the rest of it doesn't really matter. Now, they'll still cuss those guys out. But if your ones play well, that's all that really matters, okay? Because the backups don't really play that much during the regular season. So winning the game, losing the game, not a big deal. This is what kind of things to me become important when I'm watching film. From day one, I told people that Austin Seferian Jenkins couldn't play. And we talked about him for almost 4 years, at least 3 years, how he's going to do this and do that and do this and do that. I go, he's not. He's soft. O.J. Howard is not soft, and he can block, and he's pretty darn talented, okay? From the first time I saw Austin Seferian Jenkins block, I go, he's not going to make it. He's too soft. O.J. Howard gets after it. You know, he's going to play, obviously run into some tougher competition. From what I've seen to this point, he gets after it. He's going to make some rookie mistakes. That happens. But getting after it's half the battle, and he gets after it. Like I play with guys like Ty J. Armstrong who, you know, didn't catch a lot of balls, but he got after it. And I like to see a tight end, especially with that type of ability, getting after it. McClain is number 36. He was making a lot of plays out there defensively. Now, there's certain things in football that drive me nuts. Now, the targeting penalty starts to drive me nuts because they should just say you're not allowed to hit anymore because – there was a play where number 21, Evans maybe, got a targeting penalty around the goal line. That was one of the worst things I've seen. Like he jumped up, put his two hands in front of him to protect himself, and his two hands hit the receiver in the chest. His two hands. And they call targeting. Eesh. It's getting to be too much now. We're playing football, okay? Let them hit. It's just going to get to a point where people are going to start getting hurt more because they're pulling up. And I don't know what they expect DBs to do anymore. So the guy's catching the ball on the goal line, and I'm not supposed to hit him? Since when did that happen? We were always told to tear that guy's neck out and jar the ball out. Not anymore. You just can't hit people anymore. Not in the middle of the field. They're going to protect those wide receivers as much as they possibly can. So in all, you know, we've probably seen about the last of, you know, our starters. Probably questionable that Jameis was in with those the band of gypsies probably towards the end of that second half or the first half. But you're probably done seeing the starters. They're ready to go. They're probably already preparing for Miami. Big game on Thursday, 7:30 versus the Redskins. I'm saying big game facetiously because it's awful. The last preseason game is awful to watch. It's FedEx drivers against UPS drivers. And nothing against you guys. I love you. But there's a lot of people that won't be in the NFL anytime soon. And that's what they play. That's who they're playing in there. You might see, I don't think they're going to do it. I was going to say maybe it's a young kid like O.J. Howard. I don't even think they do that anymore. They're scared of getting people hurt. And I think that's one of the big reasons why there's so many damn injuries out there. And tweaks and this and that. So that's the way it is now in modern day NFL. I wish I was making. I was talking to DeMar Dotson the other day, and I said to him, "I made $90,000 my rookie season." He looked at me, and goes, "That's not true." And I go, "Yeah, it's true." He goes, "No, seriously." I go, "Dude, I made $90,000 my rookie season." And he looked at me as he jumped back into his Rolls Royce. He goes, "That's messed up." And I go, "You better believe it's messed up. Started 16 games, $90,000." and I was rich. Until you look at DeMar's contract, you're like, damn. If you're average now, you make six. Six. Times have changed. I remember guys like Warren Sapp were making five. I'm like, oh my God, wow, this is crazy. Five? You can't even play, you're making five now. Nobody's signing for five. So God bless them. I hope they take care of that money and save up a little bit for later because our world's crazy. We never know what's going to happen. We better be able to save our money for a rainy day, that's for sure. So it's been wonderful talking to you people. If you guys want to get in contact with me, Ian Beckles at radioinfluence.com, and you can basically ask me questions, and we can go from there. Football questions, you can always contact me on social media, at Ian Beckles, and most of my stuff is food related, so if you like food, go that way. Well, football season's coming up. I'll be talking a little bit more about football and all the things going on as well. So I'm excited. Football season's right around the corner. We just got about a couple more weeks of this bull crap towards the end. It just seems like it just kind of drags on. But in the meantime, you got some college football. My Indiana Hoosiers are playing the Ohio State Buckeyes on Thursday. I'm pretty excited about that. I got a feeling I'll probably watch that instead of the Bucks game, which to me, that fourth one is just unwatchable. So everybody have a wonderful week, and please be safe. Peace out.
Follow Ian Beckles on Twitter at Ian Beckles for all the latest on your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Chris Landry inviting you to join me for Landry Football Podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. We'll give you the coaching and scouting angle to the college and NFL game. Film breakdowns, scouting reports, X's and O's, the latest inside scoop, coaching search information. We've got it all for you. I'll take my experiences as a coach and a scout and bring it to you, the fan, to give you access to the best football information on the college and pro level. Join us at LandryFootball.com and remember the Landry Football Podcast right here, as well as Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.